So thank you very much for coming tonight to our regular Krishna Fest Sunday. Srila Prabhupada instituted this celebration many, many years ago, 45 years ago now. And it's a regular tradition in every temple of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So on this fourth day of December 2011 in San Diego, we're going to speak a little bit tonight about the mood of the season. And the season is the Christmas season. I remember as a child, I wasn't in a Christian family, but I remember I was always enthralled by this spirit of this Christmas. I could feel it. It wasn't pure. It wasn't emphasized that much. But there was this idea of peace and joy, goodwill to all. That type of thing. In fact, we would sing in grade school, in carols, and sing Christmas songs about that. And somehow that was very appealing to me, especially since I grew up in a time when there was always seemed to be some war or other going on. I guess it's still like that. And not only that, but some of you are too young to remember the Cold War in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, and especially the 80s. There was the Cold War, and there was this, I remember, the sword of Damocles hanging over, imminent nuclear annihilation, at any moment. And so that was kind of part of the ethos. And so the idea of peace and joy and, actual lasting peace was very attractive. So today I'd like to read a little bit from the Bhagavad Gita on this subject of peace. It appears in several verses, several chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna talks about how one can attain real peace, both individually and in the society. And so I'm going to read from the second chapter, near the very end of the chapter. Krishna gives a nice verse and a small purport Srila Prabhupada gave, very illuminating, and we'll discuss that. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita summarized, text number 71. Some of you may know this verse. Vyaya kaman yak sarvam. Pumangs chadati nikspriha. Nirmamo nadahankara. Sashantim adigachati. A person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from such desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship, and is devoid of false ego, that person alone can attain real peace. The Prabhupada gives a nice summary in his purport. To become desireless means not to desire anything for sense gratification. In other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desirelessness. To understand one's actual position as the eternal servitor of Krishna, without falsely claiming this material body to be oneself, and without falsely claiming proprietorship over anything in the world, is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. One who is situated in this perfect stage knows that because Krishna is the proprietor of everything, everything must be used for the satisfaction of Krishna. Arjuna did not want to fight for his own sense satisfaction. But when he became fully Krishna conscious, he fought because Krishna wanted him to fight. For himself, there was no desire to fight. But for Krishna, the same Arjuna fought to his best ability. Real desirelessness is desire for the satisfaction of Krishna, not an artificial attempt to abolish all desires. The living entity cannot be desireless or senseless, but he does have to change the quality of his desires. I'll read that again. The living entity cannot be desireless or senseless, but he does have to change the quality of the desires. A materially desireless person certainly knows that everything belongs to Krishna, Isha Vashna Medam Sarvam, and therefore he does not falsely claim proprietorship over anything. This transcendental knowledge is based on self-realization. namely knowing perfectly well that every living entity is an eternal part and parcel of Krishna in spiritual identity, and that the eternal position of the living entity is therefore never on the level of Krishna or greater than him. This understanding of Krishna consciousness is the basic principle of real peace. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshurun Midatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this ideal of peace is a constant thread throughout society, as long as I've been awake and aware. Everyone wants peace. Peace and joy. Isn't that kind of the spirit of this month? Peace and joy. Joy to all the world. But somehow or other, we can't get to that point. And the reason is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Because we have forgotten our actual identity as spiritual beings, we are think of ourselves in what we call a false identity or a false ego. Ego means a sense of self. And it's based on the body that we have. There's a certain place that we're born. I was born in America, so I'm an American, others were born in another country. There's a certain age, right? Oh, I'm 10 years old, 20, 30, 40, whatever it may be. Gender, race, language, and then there's the more subtle aspects, the culture you're raised in, what your parents give to you. All of this goes into formulating your identity. On the external side, there's the body, but there's also the mind, which is part of the body, the subtle, what we call the subtle body, which really has so many impressions, so many identities, so many desires and fears and aspirations. And they all go into making what we consider our identity. Now, as we go through this world, we require certain things for our safety, for our health, for our pleasure, that pertain to this body and pertain to this mind. And when we identify ourselves as separate entities like this, there's a competition. There is always a competition. From when we're little children playing in the schoolyard, right? The bigger kid wants your lunch money, right? Or there's all of these, you know, cliques that develop. And so there's conflict even in the early age. And as we go on, there's competition to get a better job, to get this mate, that mate, you see. And the hard struggle for existence, Prabhupada summarizes it. And we all experience that. There's every day we have to eat. Every day we have to keep warm. Every day we have to have a roof over our head, or try to, right? So there's a constant struggle like this. And therefore, there's never any peace. As Srila Prabhupada as one of his favorite quotations from the Bhagavad Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, quoting this great devotee, who was a small boy, Prahlad Maharaj, Sada samudvigna dhyama sadgrahat. Very illuminating phrase. Sada samudvigna dhyā means the mind is always disturbed because a sadgrahat, because we are holding on to, we are identified with and covetous of that which is temporary, that which is constantly changing. Think about it. We all know, although we don't think about it, but we all know deep down inside, and often we think about it, how we ourselves are always changing. Right? As a child grows up, somebody's five, he's six, five is in the rearview mirror, he'll never be five again. Right? And then on and on, 10 and 20, it's a whole different life as you go on. It's always changing. Now, in this changing life, we try to find some permanence. Right? Even marriage. Marriage means, okay, this is the one. I'm going to stay with this person, right? Until death was part. A house. I want to have a house, the American dream. I don't want to go from apartment to apartment. Let me have a house. Never mind if the bank owns it. I think it's my house. Right? My house. Proprietorship. My wife, my husband, my kids, my bank. So that to try to push back on this ever-changing nature of this world that's always pulling us forward and on ultimate to destruction. You know, it's called death, where everything is taken away. So we want to forget that, and we try to find permanency, but we can't. And therefore, sada samugmina diyam. The mind is always disturbed. So how can we get beyond that? We have to go to the root. This is another thing from my younger days. I was considered wanted to be considered a radical. You know what radical? Radical means someone who gets to the root of the problem, all right? And I thought it was a socioeconomic, you know, political root. You know, that communist, leftist philosophy, whatever it was. And we think this is the root of all the problems in the world, you know. But it wasn't. You know, I didn't really know. I was in ignorance. And so all of our efforts to solve the problems failed. And there's still wars going on and all of these things happening. So the Bhagavad Gita, the philosophy of bhakti, as explained in the literature such as the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Purana, and others that have been so wonderfully given to us by our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, really get to the root of the problem. And Krishna, every word in this Bhagavad Gita, and it's very succinct, you know, he's on a battlefield, takes us to the essence of the problem and gives us the solution to all the problems. That's the whole idea. The real root, if you solve the root problem, just like a disease, if you get down to the bottom of it and you cure the root of the disease, then you'll be cured. Otherwise, if you just work with the symptoms, then you stay ill, right? So the root of the problem is this false identification. That's why Krishna says, nidahankara. Ahankara means, I am the doer, independent of anyone else. I'm the enjoyer, I'm the doer, I'm the owner. Forgetting our dependence on the Supreme, the source of everything. If we think about it, are we really independent? Our very next breath, can we control that? You know, we're dependent on the air, on the water, on the sunlight, on the food, as children for our parents, as old people for those take care of us. Always, we're dependent. But we're acting as if we're independent doers. So the false identity is that we're this body in relation to this body and all of these things I described before. The real identity is that we're spiritual beings. We are consciousness, conscious entities. And Krishna describes the qualities in this chapter. The first one is, we never die. We're never born. We're eternal. And we don't. We say, well, how am I eternal? I remember so many years in this lifetime. I know I'm having some years left. And then how am I eternal? We forgot. It's as simple as that. We've forgotten. Just like everyone here, I don't think, can anyone tell me what they were doing and what they were thinking and acting when they were 1 year old? 1 year old? No, you can't remember. Your mother can tell you. There's pictures, maybe videos now, right? There you are, you know, crawling on the ground and the floor or whatever. You know, you were there, but you can't remember. So the Krishna enlightens us. We can't see this, but yes, you were also conscious in the womb. And before the womb, you were also conscious in a different lifetime. This is just a coat and a shirt and coat. There's the shirt is the mind, intelligence, and all internal body. The coat is your external body that we can all see, that we commonly call the body. But it's just like a shirt and coat. Then at night, you take your shirt and coat off, put your pajamas on, you know. You don't think, oh, I'm a different person. Right? Same person. So at death, you take this shirt and coat off, you know, you put another one on. Now, the analogy is not perfect because the internal body, the mind, stays with you. You see? And then you go into another gross body and you begin again. Forget all about your previous body and bodies. It's been going on for millions and millions and millions of years. This is the first lesson that Krishna teaches. And further on in the Gita, he will explain that every one of us is also part and parcel, what he says, part and parcel of Krishna, my ansha. In other words, we share with Krishna all the qualities in minute degree. Krishna is a person, we're persons. Does anyone in this room think I'm not a person? Of course we're persons. We have senses, we have desires, we move, we do things, we have names. That makes a person. Name, form, activities, qualities. You see? That's a person. Krishna has all those, and so do we. So we are little particles of spirit, you see? Consciousness, never die, eternal. Krishna is the supreme consciousness. Eternal, never dies. Is it? So our perfection is, first of all, realizing that. And the relationship is one of service. Service. Krishna also serves us. Where do you think all that air and water and light has come from? It's come from Krishna. It's come from God. Aren't we being helped and served and maintained at every moment? But we're forgetting, just ungrateful children. We forget the parents. We neglect them. We ignore them. Turn our back. So Krishna consciousness means the purpose is to once again understand. It may come gradually, but we have philosophically we should understand that. This is the path to peace. If we want to be peaceful, we need to follow this formula that Krishna has. So one of the ones is nirahankara. Now, the first one is giving up material desire. This is very difficult. You can't just decide to do it. Because our whole mind is filled with material desires. This is all we know. We've cultivated it for many lifetimes. So this is a culture, it is a practice, a process, by which we can gradually transform those desires, material desires, into desires for Krishna, desires for pleasing Krishna. Just like this chanting of the holy name. We just had a nice, what we call kirtan. This is called the Dharma of the age, the process by which we can make best advancement toward perfection. And what are we doing there? We're chanting Hare Krishna, mostly, right? A few other mantras. So how does that work? Why is that a process? Why is that the Yuga Dharma? Why is that a process that we practice so assiduously? And all of us who live in the temple or 100% devotees, every day, you know, there's the meditative chanting and the collective chanting. Hours we spend with this mantra. So how does that connect us? Well, this is part of the reciprocation that Krishna gives. He makes himself accessible through sound vibration. Just like I chanted this verse, Vihaya Kamandak Sarvam. This is also vibrated by Krishna on the battlefield. He's giving us instruction as much as he's giving Arjuna. This is transcending of time. It doesn't matter 5,000 years ago. It's the same instruction. It's eternal. So the same thing is there with the holy name. This mantra that you see above the altar there. That mantra is divinity and sound. Divinity and sound. The name Hare is a name for Krishna's internal pleasure-giving energy personified as Srimati Radharani. You see? Person. Krishna is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Full in all opulence. Rama is also a name for Krishna. That means the supreme enjoyer and the source of all spiritual happiness. When we vibrate these names, then we're contacting Krishna through sound vibration. And that's pleasing to Krishna. He is reciprocating with us. And the more that we do that, the more that this kama, this material desire, is purified. And we find that the desire to connect with Krishna increases and the desire to connect with illusion and with sense gratification decreases. It's a science. We don't know how it works. When you take a medicine, do you know how it's curing you? The doctor prescribes it, you take it, and it works. Similarly, the sound vibration works. You see, it works for any of those anyone who takes part in it. So, if one is able to give up all of these material desires and simply have the desire to serve Krishna and love Krishna and to understand who Krishna is and to investigate the absolute truth or the source of everything, those are all pure desires. They're not kama. Then one will be at peace. Nikspriha means living free of selfish desires. Let's call them selfish desires. Then nirmama, the natural conclusion of this, is that I don't own anything separately. If you think about it, everything has been created by a higher power. You may not know who that is, but it's all been given to us. We come into this earth, and things are provided. You see? And we may move things around a little bit, but do we really own them? If you work in a factory, and you build cars, or you make electronics, or anything, you don't own it. The proprietor owns it. You're working for the owner. You get a salary, but you don't own the car. You don't own that. So similarly, we are in a place that we didn't make, that we don't own. And if we recognize that Krishna is the supreme proprietor, then we'll have this sense, oh, nothing belongs to me. See, when you, who is that great sage who said something? When you have nothing to lose, isn't it? Was it Bob Dylan?
John Lennon.
John Lennon.
Or maybe George.
Or maybe George Harrison. He was a devotee. He was a Krishna Bhakta. But think about that for a minute. Now, if you feel that you are not the if I own something, suppose I have a big estate, and I have so much money, and I have so many cars, and big bank account, and all these things. Just think of the anxiety, right? To keep that, and to increase it. Just imagine if you had $1 billion under your control at this moment. So, oh, that'd be great, you know? But think of the responsibility, you know? How can I increase it? How can I protect it? Well, how can I spend it so that I can enjoy it? You know, you have so many things. And then what about my children? Someone's going to maybe kidnap them so that they, you know, they have to worry about security and insurance and all these different things. They've done studies. It's not that the more things that you have, the happier you are. No. Happiness is a much more subtle thing. It depends on, you know, healthy relationships, a sense of security. You know, yes, there has to be a certain modicum of things for support. But that's not, having more and more things is not happiness. So for a devotee, we feel, like the devotees who are living as monks here, we don't own anything. Whatever we have is loaned to us for the purpose of service. And that makes us happy. This is another theme of this season, right? To give is better than to receive, right? So many people are wondering, oh, I have to get such a list of gifts, is it? And everyone knows that if you give something to someone you love and they appreciate it, this is a fulfilling in and of itself, right? Yeah, I want to get some gifts, but the real thing, like for a parent, is to give gifts to their children and the children to be happy with them. That really makes the happiness, right? This is a hint of the happiness to be had in bhakti yoga, in Krishna consciousness. Krishna is our supreme friend. This is the other part of what it means to be peaceful. It's another verse we'll maybe talk about in a few minutes. So, he's the supreme friend. He loves all of us. He maintains all of us. He's just our father, you see. We have to try to feel like that, you see. And therefore, if you do something to please him, he will shower so much happiness on you from within. And this is actually what devotees feel. You know, I'm living with these the wardrobe, right? That's a big deal. I got online the other day just to see what the 1% is buying these days, or the 1/10 of 1%. You know, we're the 99%. So I can only, the only word to describe it, it's obscene. The amount of money. One bag, yes, it was an alligator bag, special, $20,000. Someone will buy that. Can you believe that? Do you know how many Sunday fees, we could pay the mortgage here for months on that. $20,000 for a bag. You know, and so many other things. What a waste. So, but if you feel, oh, whatever is there, it belongs to Krishna, is meant for his service, then you give. You feel you don't have anything. But what you do have, ultimately, is this peace and joy that everyone is looking for. You actually feel peaceful, you know? That you're whatever you have, you're giving to Krishna. Giving to Krishna, giving to Krishna. And he gives back 100 times. Don't forget this idea that we are part and parcel of Krishna. What does it mean practically? Now, sometimes it's said that there's the self and the supreme self. You heard this word, the Atma and the Paramatma, right? So Atma means self. This is who we really are. We're a Jivatma, spirit. And the super self is Krishna. But that means that we're non-different from Krishna. We want to serve ourselves. If we really want to serve ourselves, we serve Krishna. Right now, we're serving the false self, the body, the senses. This is what sense gratification is all about. But we can never be happy. But if you serve the real self, you're actually serving yourself. Otherwise, you're serving your not-self. You see the problem? It's just like if you're on a masquerade ball, say, a few months back, was it a little more than a month? We had Halloween, right? So there's so many people they put on costumes. And then they act like that. They feel, you know, they can like act like they wouldn't act ordinary, right? But just suppose that in the course of acting like what? Like a ghost or a zombie, You know, you knock, get knocked on the head. I forgot who I am. Now I have amnesia. And I look in the mirror. Oh my God, I'm a zombie. You know? Now I have to act like a zombie. It's not a very good idea. You know, it's kind of scary. But this is exactly what's happened to us. We have on this costume. We've gotten knocked by the process of death and rebirth, and we completely forgot who we really are a long time ago. And now we have to act according to the costume we're wearing. And gradually it's aging. Oh, now I'm 20 years old. Now I'm 30 years old. Yeah. Now I'm 50 years old. I have to act different. But you see, it's all an illusion. It's just a masquerade ball. It's really like that. Now, if by some good offices, someone comes who says, oh, you're not a zombie. That's just a costume. You have a whole life separately. Take the costume off. You know, and here's your home. Here's your job. Here's your wife. Here's your kids. You see, this is your real life. What a relief that'll be, right? Oh, what a relief. It's exactly like that. The spiritual master comes, Srila Prabhupada comes, representing a whole series of realized sages. Krishna comes, speaks the Bhagavad Gita. All of this is to remind us who we actually are, so that we can give up all of these masquerades and be our real selves and be really happy and peaceful eternally. But it's not so easy, because we've been so used to acting like zombies that we need a gradual process to get back our memory. It's exactly like that. So the first thing, dear Mamo, nothing belongs to me. It's all been given by God, Krishna, and therefore let me give it back. That's what prasadam is all about. We're going to have a wonderful meal of vegetarian spiritual food offered to Krishna. It's yours. You enjoy it. We'll take the remnants. He gives it all back. So it's an exchange of love. It's not just, I want to eat, let me eat something. You know, that's false ego. Nirahankara, giving up the false ego, being the real ego, I am eternal servant of Krishna. Sashantim adigachati. This is real peace. Otherwise, we can never be really peaceful. Because as soon as we get to where we think we want to be, it's changing. It's changing. And sometimes the change comes very suddenly. Sudden disease or an accident, or someone we love gets an accident, or economic disaster. Lehman Brothers. You know, it strikes fear into the hearts of the whole world. Lehman, you know, to collapse. Maybe there'll be another Lehman Brothers. And it'll happen, you know, my dollar won't be worth anything. So give all your dollars to Krishna, then you won't have to worry about it. You know, you don't think he'll give it back? Really, you know. So that's is how to be peaceful. And it's not possible to do it right away, but there is a process beginning with Krishna consciousness. Now I want to speak a little bit about the other verse that Prabhupada mostly talked about when he talked about peace, and that is the famous peace formula. And that's a little more involved with social peace, because there cannot be peace in the world or in any community without people being peaceful inside. The peace really begins in here, and that's this verse we just chanted. You know, to come to that stage of being desireless, only desiring service, and being free of this false misconception and false sense of possessiveness. So similar ideas, but more on a social scale, is given at the end of chapter 5, where Krishna says, Bhoktaram Yagatapasam, that one who understands that I am the real beneficiary of all of the hard work that you're doing. Everyone's performing what we call tapasya, austerities in his life, and making sacrifice. That the real beneficiary should be, not that we shouldn't have enough for our maintenance, but not extravagantly. Everything we can should be for the benefit of Krishna, sarvaloka maheshwaram, because Krishna is the Lord. He's the master and controller of everything, all people and all worlds. And, so important, suridam sarvabhutanam. He is the dear friend of everyone. We're looking for that friend that will be faithful, isn't it? Friendship, what is a friend? A friend is someone who cares for you and will look out for you and stand up for you and help you in time of need. And is also one who you enjoy with in times of happiness, right? And forever. You know, where is that friend forever? We all need a friend. So sudidam means one who is, we have this bosom buddy, this idea, you know. It's like that, the heart. Rita means heart. So Krishna is deep in our heart, and he's our eternal well-wisher. So of all living beings, not even just human beings, but all living beings, one who knows these three things, he's the enjoyer, Krishna is the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerity. is the Lord of all and the best friend of all. One who knows that attains real peace. Shantamichati. So in this age, or in this period or season, we should try to understand these principles and put into practice the process of a devotional service or bhakti. And we can really be forces, you know, or agents for peace in this at this time. It is the only way to reconcile, if you will, reconcile all of the differences between peoples and you know, all of the wars that are always going on, is by all of us understanding the real platform of oneness that we have. That every single one of us, looking beyond the coats and the shirts of the bodies and the cultures and the languages and all of this business, you know, we are all spiritual beings. We are all children of Krishna. We have that unification. And you can see with it, throughout this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, every culture, every age, every race, every language practically is represented. And when, you know, but everyone meets on the platform of kirtan and service to Krishna. There's no, you know, distinction in that regard. Now, of course, we need to, you know, act with each other in a reasonable way so that we don't forget Krishna and inflame desires, and therefore we have certain rules of association between men and women and that. But ultimately, we're all spiritual beings, and that's really the platform of peace in this world. And as far as joy goes, we're naturally joyful. You should know that if you're at all sad, that's an unnatural state. Or what to speak of, depressed, or all of this business. It's totally unnatural. By nature, we are full of happiness. Anandamaya byasat. This is Krishna's nature. You never see Krishna with frowning and depressed and, you know, taking Prozac. No, never. You know, he's always full of ananda. And those who are with him are also full of ananda. Ananda, you know, bliss. You know, in this world, we try to get artificially. There's even a drug. I was reading, you know, white chocolate, they say, has anandamide in it. It's actually a drug, anandamide, believe it or not. You know, they picked it up. But no, you cannot find ananda on a material plane. Ananda is there with Krishna. And if you, it's just like each one of us, in our heart, there's an ocean of ananda. You know that? Krishna's there. A reservoir, the reservoir of pleasure, he's called. But we've forgotten that reservoir. We're going outside the contact to try to find that pleasure. And we're being frustrated again and again. So by chanting the holy name and other practices of Krishna consciousness, you tap into that reservoir of ananda. And then all of these petty little, you know, enjoyments in this world become insignificant. You know? I've been doing this for 40 years. I must be getting something out of it. You know? I'm just brainwashed. Yes, I mean, I'm not pure devotee, but there's ananda, there's happiness there in Krishna consciousness, and all of us have the right to it. Every single one of us can experience that. It just depends on taking the process. So I encourage you, please take this Bhagavad Gita or one of the other books from the bookstore, study, you see, and take up the process. It's very easy. This is chanting. Of japa at home and kirtan whenever possible. You don't even need instruments. Prabhupada says, actually, you don't need any instruments. Everyone can sit in their home and clap. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. There you go. Is it? That didn't cost anything? You didn't have to stand on your head, make stretching, and pull a muscle. You know, you just, and that's the highest yoga process, is chanting the holy name. And you integrate it, you understand the meaning, how it, you know, why it is from reading the books, purify your intelligence, and become convinced, because it is a struggle. It was so conditioned. It's like some addict, you know. And again, all of a sudden say, oh, you shouldn't drink, you shouldn't smoke. I know, but, you know, just one more. I need a drink. Isn't it? Well, but don't you know that it's destroying you? Yeah, I know that. I know, but just one more. Isn't it? The conditioning is so tight. And if someone who is free from that sees that, says, oh, this poor person, you know, why don't, let me help you to, you know, he come, you know, stay in this place where everyone is, you know, 12 steps, you know, right up the street is AA, you know. So it's a process. It's not easy because we're so habituated, the mind, the senses, you know. But it works if we follow it properly. And if we understand, if our intelligence is strong, then we can stay with the process and come to the platform of peace and joy and happiness. Even in this world, it's possible to do that. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much for your attention. If there are any discussion or comments, we could entertain them at this time. We covered two verses. Viha kama nyaksarvan pumang chadati nikspraham. Niyamamondalahankara sashanti madigachiti. Those who give up completely all material desire and live free of such desire, who are free of false possessiveness and false ego, false sense of self, they attain real peace. And the other one was this peace forming. Bhoktaram yagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatva mam shantam richati. Krishna says, one who understands that I am the real enjoyer of all efforts, of all austerities and sacrifice, that I'm the Lord of all the worlds and all peoples, and that I am the dearest friend of everyone, can really attain peace in this world. Questions? Yes?
Devin Richaswami last night was also saying that nothing belongs to us, everything belongs to Krishna, including our bodies,
mm-hmm.
and that we're just borrowing them, or like they're on loan, or they're just given to us, or whatever. But I was just thinking about what you said about the drunk person just a minute ago,
mm-hmm.
and like most women, like that have half a brain, would never dream of drinking while they were pregnant,
mm-hmm.
because it's not fair to the unborn child. It's not
right.
fair.
Right.
That child is its own life. It doesn't belong to you. You have no right to do that to it, but they wouldn't think that about themselves. Well, as soon as I'm done, I can get drunk again. But it's like, why don't we think that way? We tend to think that way about other people, more so even than ourselves. Like, we wouldn't dream of doing that. Why would we dream of doing that to ourselves? Because this is on loan. We don't have the right.
Because we don't understand. Because we don't understand that this body is also not ours. You know, this is the illusion. Anyone, as you say, who's decent, who's a little more, you know, I mean, there are women who couldn't care less, right? They take cocaine and drink, you know, right? So this is a very low consciousness. We understand this person is like an animal. So the development of a conscience for caring for others, beginning with the most basic of caring with your own child, is kind of, you know, minimum for being a human being, isn't it? But beyond that, as you say, okay, now the child is born, you know, now I can go back to smoking or something. Or even, you know, without involving a child, you know, this is my body, I can do with it whatever I want, right? So this is a grand illusion. This is why we need to study and understand how dependent we are. That it's a gift, especially the human form of life is a gift, it's a rare gift. And it shouldn't be misused. Now, the only ones who were hurting are ourselves. And even as a human society, and people understand, just think of this debate about global warming, right? And, you know, carbon emissions, right? So most intelligent people, you know, most inquiring people understand, yes, the carbon dioxide is increasing and human activity is a large part of that. So we're fouling our own nest, you know, as a human society, can we get it together to, you know, and the technology is there, to decrease that so that we won't destroy the planet, right? Because after all, we have children and grandchildren and, you know, we don't want to destroy the planet, right? But there's a whole bunch of people, you know, first of all, they argue that, oh, it's not really true. And the other ones say, well, even if it is, then you start and then I'll follow, you know. In other words, if India and China is not going to do it, then America is not going to do it either. And so the result is it keeps increasing and increasing. Now you would think, oh, we're intelligent enough to do that. But no, we're not. Because the material desire, the greed, the lust, the desire for immediate gratification, or even just my lifetime. All right, maybe by the end of the century, the world will be unlivable. But I'll be dead by then. Who cares? Right? So it's like gross selfishness. So but Krishna consciousness is just the opposite of that. The pure devotees, the great devotees, are always thinking of the benefit of others, beginning with Krishna, and then you know extending the Krishna's pardon parcels for everyone else. Everyone else should have a chance to understand, you know, how to live in such a way for their ultimate benefit, not just for the immediate benefit of the body and the senses. This is why. The material desire overwhelms the intelligence, just like for the addict, back to the alcoholic or the addict, right? The alcoholic knows that he's destroying his own life, the family is just being destroyed, or gambling addict, right? Can't stop himself, right? Needs an intervention. So he's torn. There's that practically drug of the desire to gamble versus his intelligence says, oh, this is bad for me. But if you become addicted enough, it destroys your intelligence. Exactly what Krishna says in the third chapter, that kama, strong material desire, covers your knowledge. Avritam jnanam etena jnaninam nitivaitena. And it's never satisfied. It burns like fire, life after life. So how to stop that fire? That's Krishna consciousness. Kirtan. This is, you know, perfect. You know, Lord Chaitanya has given us this process of yoga. Dynamic yoga. You don't have to sit for hours and, you know, or days in solitude. Come together. Help each other, you know, and chant and dance. And if you get into it enough and you understand the process and you also cultivate knowledge, then very quickly you can give up these addictions. You can give up the gross addictions and ultimately even the subtle ones. This is science. It works. So the answer to your question is that material desire in all its levels is what covers our knowledge, and people forget, and therefore they do self-destructive things, you know. And the reverse of that is to do wholesome things for the benefit of our real self and for everyone else through the process of Krishna consciousness. Anyone else? Comment? Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Very
yes. Yeah. Kanka.
Also, Srila Prabhupada talked about the following the four related principles may seem difficult, but actually it's called the principles of freedom.
Yes.
Because those, when it, you become practiced, you become free of that anxiety of those material desires.
Yes, it's very interesting. That phrase, regulative principles of freedom, actually comes from a translation in this chapter, a few verses previous. Raga dvesha vimukta is tu vishayanandriyaischala natva vasha vidhayavna prasadam adigachati. And this also involves peace. So in this verse, it says, raga dvesha. Raga dvesha means attraction and repulsion. It's a flip side. That we talk about kama, but there's also, you know, desire and revulsion. These are duality. So here he's saying that if one practices these regulative principles of freedom, and you talked about our famous regulative principles, but ultimately it's all the principles, the do's and the don'ts of bhakti yoga, which are many, then even when you're moving amongst the object of the senses, you see, an alcoholic, okay, we've had devotees who joined, who used to be alcoholics, you can go to a bar, you know, and try to sell a BTG or something, and you won't be tempted at all. You're chanting Hare Krishna. It's not, the desire is gone, you know. So it's raga dvesha vimukta is too. One can move, if one is linked up to Krishna and under the protection of Krishna consciousness and Krishna himself, then even amidst the greatest temptations, positive and negative, raga dvesha, you'll be free of desire and hate. Vishyanindriyaischaran, atma vasya vidhaya atma. You see? Atmavashe means self-controlled. Self-controlled in all of its meanings. Following the vidhis, the rules and regulations. And then you get the prasadam. Not just the food prasadam, but all kinds of prasadam from Krishna. The grace, the mercy of Krishna. And then, prasadi savadukkanam hanadoso bajayate. All of one's miseries in this world are destroyed. And prasanna cheta, so you quickly become joyful. And what else? Sashanti madigachati. There's the peace again. More peace, you know. Without that peace and without that Krishna consciousness, there's no question of happiness. So this is all in the second chapter, right in the summary. What to speak of the rest of the book? This is a summary of the process. So very instructive and practical instruction of Krishna. Yes.
He also talks about the how sugar candy is for a jaundiced person is not sweet, but. And so by this chanting, we become you know, more and more of that sweetness. You start tasting it.
Exactly.
Because you become healthy.
Yes, it's just like that. And we'll end here. And that is that, you know, Krishna is as I mentioned, the reservoir of all pleasure. And he's willing, he's anxious and eager to make us, fill us with the pleasure that's there in his lila and his world, really. So as soon as we start practicing, because we're so habituated, you know, to not taste this kind of pleasure, we wouldn't sense gratification. Therefore, it may taste bitter. Although I must say for myself, I never really had a point where Hare Krishna was very bitter. I may have been distracted a little bit, but it was either neutral or very sweet. Anyway, but if you practice, you know, very quickly, you begin to taste the natural sweetness there. And the analogy is given by Rupa Goswami, very, very wonderful. We know sugar is sweet, right? Everyone agrees? But if you are diseased, if you have jaundice, sugar doesn't taste sweet anymore. You have too much bile in your blood, and it tastes bitter. But you know that if I keep taking the sugar, it'll eventually cure the disease and taste sweet. But you have to know that. Otherwise, oh, this is bitter. You'll never take the medicine. So the process of Krishna consciousness may be a little bitter in the beginning. Four regular principles? Oh, impossible. No, it's possible. You know? And very quickly, that becomes a foundation of your, you know, strength in devotional service. So thank you very much for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We will have another little kirtan now. Hare Krishna.